Senate Revenue Committee. This is more like it. It's drizzly, it's gray, and we're getting the March forecast. maybe, that's right. Maybe we'll see, maybe we'll see some clearing, but now maybe equilibrium has returned, and our forecasts will have also returned. I'd like to welcome the House Revenue Committee, and thank you for joining us. Chair Butler, do you have any comments for the betterment before we get moving?
Thank you, Senator. We're just delightful to be here. We appreciate your hosting the House Revenue Committee, and we'll try and watch our comportment.
Well, you know, the thing to watch is how many senators are left at about 9:45, because your attendance and ours is you've beaten us so far, but we'll make a strong March comeback. Before we get into the forecast, Paul Warner, if you can come up. We had a big decision made last night. The Supreme Court rendered a decision, and we'd like to just get folks officially updated on the Bobo decision that was handed down this morning.
Thank you, Chair. Paul Warner, Legislative Revenue Office. The Supreme Court issued a ruling on the Bobo versus Kulongoski case. This was the case, as you recall, that involved the 2001 legislature, in which the Medicaid upper payment limit money from the federal government had initially been counted as general fund dollars, and then the legislature pulled that revenue source from the general fund, and the consequence of doing that was to reduce the kicker refund that followed that biennium by $113 million. The original circuit court had ruled that the state had acted properly. It was the appeals court who overruled that and found that once dollars had come into the general fund, been received by the general fund, then they had to stay in the general fund for purposes of calculating the kicker. Well, the Supreme Court has sided with the circuit court, overruled the appeals court, and the result is that the legislature acted properly in terms of modifying the general fund definition, pulling those muffled dollars out. So there was a risk out there, as you recall, we've talked about, of $113 million that now is not out there. So that once that decision has been made, so this will have no impact on the forecast that you'll be hearing in a few minutes. What it does is remove one of the risks that we've identified. The other thing, and we'll talk to counsel about this, there is a pretty good discussion in the case about three-fifths votes and revenue-raising measures originating in the Senate. So those were some of the arguments that were involved, and this may give counsel some further guidance as to where the Supreme Court is on some of those revenue matters.
Right now you have all of us here, and you're going to leave us hanging on the three-fifths. Have you had a chance to read that section?
Mr. Chair, the part that I read, it does make it pretty clear that the three-fifths is referring to taxes, mm-hmm. and that there's a historical meaning for that. So what we'll do is we'll follow up next week with the committees and get get Texter in and talk about his interpretation of that and how that might affect council's decisions.
Great. Well, the wind you feel is the exhale that just came from at least half the building on that decision. We've got one more big one coming. Questions for Paul on the Bobo decision? Thank you very much. Mr. Patowski and team. Mr. Kennedy.
There's a mad exit that you'll
eat. The coffee is back over here. Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chair, members of the Senate Revenue Committee, and Mr. Chair, members of the House Revenue Committee.
Good morning.
Morning. For the record, My name is Tom Pitowski, state economist with the Office of Economic Analysis. With me today is Michael Kennedy, senior revenue economist, also with the Office of Economic Analysis. We're here today to release our March 2005 economic and revenue forecast. And what I think I'll do is just launch right into that with our first slide. Just want to brief you again on the process by which we come up with these quarterly forecasts. And the process essentially starts off with meeting with the Governor's Council of Economic Advisors. We meet with them twice a quarter. And these are members, generally people in the business community, some academic economists, people that have knowledge of particular sectors in the economy, and then we find their guidance very useful in terms of our type of statistical work and getting a sense of what's happening at the moment in the economy for various sectors of the economy. We meet with them. We also use Global Insight, which is a national forecasting firm, and we use their information to help us model the Oregon economy. We develop a preliminary economic forecast. We meet once again with the Governor's Council of Economic Advisors. And then we also meet with a Department of Administrative Services Advisory Committee. This is a committee made up of various departments and agencies throughout the state where we obtain information from to help us do our forecast, and agencies that use our forecast. And we get counsel for them. Once we have all that information involved, the economic model then drives our revenue model. We model mostly the personal income tax models and the corporate income tax, two of the biggest components for the general fund area. And we also now have a council of revenue forecast advisors that help us directly on the revenue forecast. We meet with them once a quarter. These are people that are CPAs. They have clientele with both at corporations and with higher income individuals. Give us some up-to-date aspects of what's happening with estimated payments among their clientele. Also, we have Department of Revenue representatives are on this committee, and also from the Legislative Revenue Office are members of this. And as we found this committee to be extremely useful in giving us sort of up-to-date knowledge about what's happening, at least what they're seeing what's happening in terms of tax payments among their clientele. We put that all together. We take into account then any legislative actions that you have all might have made, and we come up then with our final revenue forecast. And we do this on a quarterly basis to keep you up to date about any particular changes we may see.
So, Tom, on that, do you think the changes that we made in terms of the revenue forecasting and the additional meetings that we're having are going to be helpful in terms of fine-tuning the forecast, the changes that were made 2 years ago?
Mr. Chair, a crisis always makes you stand up and take notice. And I think the bright part of the horrible time we went through is that we did quite a complete revamping of our both our economic and our revenue forecasting. And Department of Revenue has been instrumental. We now have information that wasn't available before, and they're able to extract that out. So both technology has helped. Our partners that we work with have helped out. And, yes, the changes have definitely made, I think, a real stride to both helping the accuracy of the forecast and giving us more notice about when something changes so that we can react a little bit quicker to it. Very quickly, just showing you a little about some of the regions in the state in terms of the unemployment rates. This is the most recent December month that we have. This coming Monday, the Oregon Employment Department will release the January numbers. Just briefly here, you can see that these are unadjusted unemployment rates, seasonally unadjusted. The Portland metro area having about a 6.1% unemployment rate. That's relatively high, actually, for that region, what we saw in the mid-1990s. But it has come down quite a bit from sort of the 8% level that we saw during the recession. So things have improved on the unemployment front throughout the state. This is a show of the U.S. business investment And this is not financial stuff. This is the hard stuff. Your computers, your office buildings, machinery, capital type equipment that businesses use. And Oregon, as a state, is involved in making these kind of items. You can see that in the 90s, we rode up this mountain of investment, and we're very strong, and of course, we rode down the investment quite a bit, too. But, as you can see, that's been the sort of strong part in the economy coming back up. There's been quite an increase in that investment. The question now is, have you reached a new mountaintop, and are you going to come back down? Some of the things that have happened here, of course, about two-thirds of capital investment is replacement investment. So we had a bunching up of investments coming into 2000, and those things start to wear out all about the same time. You need to replace them about the same time. Plus, the federal government was providing us with a bonus depreciation provision that enticed people to undertake investments sooner than they might would like to. So now you have possibly another bunching up. And you've got the same situation, the Federal Reserve trying to push interest rates back up. You're almost looking at a repeat of possibly 2000. So are we going to come back down the mountain? Is it going to settle a little bit? What's the outlook? Well, the best we can tell from either forecasting services and so on is that there's going to be a slight sort of flattening out, a plateau, maybe in the first half of 2005, but then a continual rise, but maybe not as strong as what we've just seen. In 2003 through the beginning of 2005 here. That really influenced our outlook for Oregon. But our outlook, and Michael will be commenting about this for our revenue forecast, especially for corporate taxes, it appears that we might have been a little too pessimistic on the investment outlook. Both our national forecasting services, our revenue forecast console has indicated that their clients did not really take the bonus depreciation provisions as strongly as what was first believed they might take it. So possibly that bunching up wasn't as strong as what we were believing it might be. And that possibly the uptick will continue, just not quite as soft as what we thought the softening would be. We still don't think it's going to be as strong as we've just seen, but possibly a little bit stronger than our outlook first. And that influences our forecast. Exports have come back nicely. Exports are up about 7.9% for 2004. Pretty much across the board, there's been a little bit of softening in the computer and electronics exports, but that appears to also be turning the corner. Next. We've also developed our own economic index of leading indicators, very similar to the U.S. Economic leading indicator. And this is another aspect to try to help us out to see when turning points might be occurring. As you can see, the dark line there is the index itself. The light line is employment growth. And what you want as a leading index is that the dark line should precede the light line. And that pretty much is the case as you're looking into the late 1990s and through the recession. The index did say, yes, we are dropping, and then consequently the employment also went down. At the very end of this graph, you can see that the index started to come back down again. We saw employment growth still positive but slowing down. That slowdown is probably not as steep because these numbers in this graph does not reflect the employment re-benchmarking of employment that just occurred about a week and a half ago, which we did incorporate into our entire forecast, though. So that's an indication that things have slowed a little bit, but we don't see that it as any danger sign that the recovery is put off track by the index. This reflects the brand new re-benchmark data that the Employment Department goes back to the second half of 2003 through 2004 and reassess with better information what their initial estimates look like. And you can see that we had a recovery in employment starting in July of 2003, and now we're only about 3,000 jobs short of reaching our pre-recession level. Only 2 weeks ago, we were short about 17,000 jobs. So the revision really showed a much stronger situation of the job growth. So I think things are looking a lot brighter than
that's all before. Recent job growth. I mean, there's if it was just in the last couple of weeks, would that portend that perhaps this could continue and we could see further acceleration of job growth or...
Mr. Chair, what I meant by the last couple of weeks is that the revision was made just 2 weeks ago. And previous to that, we had older numbers, which showed that things were quite soft at the fourth quarter of this year. In fact, it showed that October and November had actually had job losses. But through the re-benchmarking, we just, as you can see, these monthly numbers, we didn't have any sort of a slowdown in the fourth quarter. But I think with our outlook, we think that we'll still have positive job growth, but our view is probably not quite as strong as what we're just seeing at the end of 2004.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Tom, after the revision, we're still 3,000 jobs short of where we would have been immediately prior to the beginning of the downticks in the marketplace. With our employment, with our total population growth, what should our job increase be in order to bring us back on a scale where we should have been with the regular growth in our population and jobs?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I don't have the exact number on that, but you are right in terms of the labor force has been growing. We've noticed that our unemployment rate had been kind of stubbornly high for a longest time. We still have one of the highest in the country. I think it's third highest for the December month. And that's some indication that, yes, you know, back in November of 2000 was the peak of the employment. And then we've taken quite a while, you know, we're looking at 4 years here, of getting back to where we were before. But you're absolutely right. There is still quite a distance to go if we would want to assimilate in the population growth, the growth of the labor force. And I can't give you the exact number on that, but you're right. We still have a ways to go to meet that kind of a benchmark.
Thank you.
This is our outlook. For the economy, previously we had 2004 only growing at 1.8%, but given the re-benchmark numbers, the growth for 2004 is coming in at 2%. We believe that the economy will still continue to grow in 2005 and 6, but then at a slightly slower rate, 2.1% for 2005 and 1.7% for 2006. Part of the reasons for this is that, you know, with the recovery that's been going on, businesses have recovered, then finally the job market has joined the ranks, and we think we're in more of the mature aspect of the business cycle. We're not in the big growth spurts at the beginning of recoveries. Plus, what is sort of booming out there that hasn't already boomed? Consumers have spent nicely, housing has done very well, and finally the business investments have come back. So we think we've already in that mature phase of the business cycle, and now we're going into our sort of longer term average growth aspect. Broadly, I'm not going to show any particular sectors today, but very broadly, I'm going to look at the manufacturing sector and the non-manufacturing sector for the economy. Manufacturing has definitely improved in 2004, really led by transportation equipment, went up 10.8%. And Oregon has quite a cluster for transportation equipment these days. We don't make passenger cars or light trucks, but anything else that carries goods or people, we seem to be involved in, whether it be snowcats, boats, bicycles, big trucks, boats, helicopters, airplanes, just about anything else. And it's actually been quite strong, or the strongest sector in manufacturing. High-tech came back a little bit. Wood was a bit stronger than we first believed, up about 2.8%, and they've had a real stellar year for 2004. The only down part of manufacturing was food products. They improved a little bit in the sense that they didn't lose as many jobs as they did before. Next. Private non-manufacturing industry is also coming back strongly, as you can see, in 2004. The ones that are coming back stronger, construction was quite strong in 2004. Retail has come back up. Finance is up a little bit. Professional business services have been up. Health, leisure, and hospitality, almost across the board. The only one that's lagging a little bit is what's the new sector called information sector. And that's your publishing sector, which includes software publishing. And that's been true throughout the U.S. The software sector has been sort of lagging in this recovery. This is a comparison of our last three forecasts, and I guess the main story here is that there's not much change. The top graph is showing personal income, hardly any change from our December forecast, and then down below in the employment growth, once again, really just reflecting the new benchmark data, but in terms of the growth paths out in the future, very little change at all. Yes. And just to summarize, we went through 3 years of job losses. Those are the gains we're looking at. We're not looking at a big bump up like in the mid-1990s. We think we're in the mature phase of the business cycle. Manufacturing is averaging just a smidgen less in employment over the period than we previously had for December. And then personal income is approximately the same we also had in our December outlook. And those are the factors then that then will influence our revenue outlook. Mm-hmm. And I'll turn that over then to, unless you have some questions, I'll turn that over to Michael Kennedy.
A couple questions for you. First, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With personal income steady, it appears to me from the overall forecast that personal income tax collections are up. Is that just a lag? Is that what's happened, or is that what's the phenomenon that occurs there, Tom?
Well, Michael, do you want to?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, this personal income figure, this is what the national definition of personal income includes, wages and salaries and other things, but it does not include
capital gains,
gains, et cetera.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
So two slides back, and Tom, you mentioned, maybe one slide back. Yeah, that one. So the top slide, and obviously our attention all goes to the years where 00 and 01, where we just fall off the cliff. But you mentioned in your opening that there were signs that you're seeing that at least, and I know you work in fractions of chances or probable chances, but you saw signs that there could be activity, and I don't want to read into it, that led to that drop-off that you're starting to see again with interest rates and other climate issues. And I don't know if you care to throw out a percentage chance or a...
Yes, Mr. Chair. I guess one of the things I didn't highlight but is highlighted in the press packet that you have in front of you along with the slideshow presentation is the risks that are involved to this forecast. One of the risks that we have is, of course, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. We expect, and this is in our forecast, we expect housing starts to be a little bit softer because of this. We worry about China. I worry sometimes about any national government that says they can completely control their economy. If they say they can slow it down, there is a worry they could slow it down too much. And they're our major trading partner with us, and that could affect us. The declining dollar is good for our exports and has helped us. We just don't want that declining dollar to be a free fall, because that's disruptive to our trading partners, and that also can invite inflation back into your economy. That means the Federal Reserve then would have to raise interest rates more, and you get into a horrible situation. So those are kind of risks out there. And then also the energy situation. We all love this beautiful weather, but we really need some snowpack, and we're running out of time to have any of that snowpack come. So we're looking at some reduced river flows. Then that, of course, pits the salmon against energy needs. If we have to supplement the hydroelectric power with other generation, most of that new generation comes from natural gas-powered turbines. And as you know, the natural gas prices come up quite dramatically. So that can translate then into higher electricity prices. All those things, in our viewpoint, the likelihood of those scenarios coming true, I would put maybe a 25% probability. To actually throw the recovery and the progressive growth off track completely.
So do you need a trifecta, if you will, on these, or is it one could be the factor that would drive you down? I mean, everything that I've seen in terms of the dollar, and just read something about Korea's decisions in terms of purchasing or not purchasing more dollars because of its declining strength, would indicate that we're not going to see a resurgence there. And I guess how significant is one area, or are you really looking at a combination of the three or four?
Well, it's really a combination of the three or four. The one that I think probably has me most concerned more immediately is on the energy front of possibly higher energy costs. But I don't think they would be to the extent that it would throw the progress completely off track. It would soften the growth, but I don't think it would destroy it. If I was talking about variants of complete unknown, then it's geopolitical risks. What's happening out in, you know, North Korea, possibly the Iraq situation, you know, those and terrorists, those are completely unknown that can throw things off. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Representative.
Mr. Chair, if you indulge me one question. Along the same line you had, this previous slide in manufacturing industry in the out years of 2009 forward, we're talking about you're showing a decrease in manufacturing strength, and the number eight risk, of course, is the ever-famous information management or information manufacturing. Could you kindly address why we're going to see a decline in the out years and not earlier, and the impact of risk number eight, which is actually IT manufacturing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Boquist, given what we know now, especially our high-tech sector, we think it's a very mature sector now, and we don't know what technological breakthrough may happen that could actually spurt greater growth. But for now, we think it's probably going to follow very closely what the U.S. outlook is completely for manufacturing. And, you know, in our manufacturing base here really depends on what's happening internationally. Throughout the world, rather than specific aspects just about Oregon. So our viewpoint is that we'll follow that national trend. There are going to be probably build-ups of more outsourcing occurring. If we just take a look over in China and India, they are all increasing their higher education systems. They're turning out more professionals. So there's a possibility of more what we call value-added type products are going to be outsourced overseas. So all those things play into this softer aspect. As an example, our computer electronics sector, we do not have employment returning back to its previous peak out through 2011. And part of these things, we believe there's been a structural change that has occurred. And we'll see some growth there, but it's just not going to come back to what it used to be. The unknown, technological changes. That could, whatever it might be, is it nanotechnology, biotech, that could actually spurt stronger employment growth than we're able to see right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other questions for Mr. Patowski? Mr. Kennedy, the weather forecast.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Michael Kennedy with the Office of Economic Analysis. Today I'm going to delve into the personal and corporate income tax forecast and what we've seen recently in a little bit of detail before getting on to the general fund, general forecast. Then I'll talk about the current biennium, give you an update on where we stand now with less than 5 months to go. Move on to the next biennium, which you are currently obviously very interested in. And then finally move on to the lottery forecast, which has changed significantly since the last forecast. So to start off with, as I've been promising now for about a year, come early February of this year, Department of Revenue was finally able to tabulate all the 2003 tax returns, and so we now know what happened, you know, for the tax year that ended 14 months ago. There's just a few things here that are very interesting. The important thing to note here is that we've collected most of these dollars already, so what we're seeing here is not doesn't really have any ramifications in terms of direct dollars, but it does have ramifications in terms of what we see in terms of these various components going forward. So I'll just highlight a couple of things here. Wages and salaries in 2003 were somewhat slower growing than we had originally expected. We had been looking at withholding levels and saying, oh, it should grow about 3% or 2.7. Well, in fact, the withholding tables had changed in 2003 to reflect the phase-in of the Measure 88 federal tax deduction. So withholding was actually stronger than the underlying wages, and that kind of threw us off for a little bit. So slow wage growth in 2003. On the other hand, on the total opposite end of the scale, capital gains grew 23% in 2003. And I'd kind of been expecting that. It puts us in a situation where we have to ask, we know there's a lot of losses out there that people are carrying forward and using to offset those gains. The question is, when do those losses get exhausted, and then to what degree do we see a bounce back in taxable capital gains? When does it happen and to what degree? It's going to have significant implications for our forecast going forward. So the bottom line, we had income growth of about 2.7% in 2003, and tax liability grew at 2.7%. Moving on to what we've seen in the last 3 months in terms of personal income tax collections, relative to the forecast, collections from November through January, about $61 million more than we had projected. And the majority of that is coming in estimated payments. We saw a significant jump up for the fourth quarterly estimated payment. Obviously, we've had positive forecast errors throughout, but that was the most significant sign. Jumping from there, then, one of the things we're doing currently to try to improve the forecast accuracy is really get a handle on what's going on, or what went on in 2004. What did income grow? What is then the implication for liability in 2004? Get that very correct, and your forecast obviously is going to benefit going forward. So what do we know about 2004? Withholding was up about 6.3%, so we obviously had significant wage and salary growth in 2004, corresponding to all of the positive economic signals that Tom just talked about. More importantly, estimated payments, which are payments for all those non-wage sources of income, were up 13% for the year. For the fourth quarter alone, they were up 20%. So there was something going on out there. Those taxpayers were responding to something they were seeing in their own income levels that caused them to up their estimated payments. Exactly what source of income is uncertain at this point and won't be for another year. But it's very likely that capital gains is playing a significant role here at this point. So overall, when I estimate what I think liability will be for 2004, I get a number roughly of $4.174 billion. And that's both an increase year over year of 8.7%. So that's strong. That's similar to what you saw in the mid-90s. It's a very good year. It's also a revision up from our previous forecast. So that's playing into what you'll now see when we talk about the forecast changes from December to this March forecast. And corporate income tax, we also had a little bit more money come in than we had projected. Payments were a little bit softer, and we think that's reflecting a lot of what we're talking about in terms of that business investment. And we're not talking about a decline or a collapse, but we're definitely talking about a softening relative to what we saw, which was incredible growth in fiscal year 2004 and even in the months after that. So we're not talking about a decline now. And, in fact, let me move on to the next slide. Our corporate income tax forecast is based upon our projection for Oregon corporate profits. And the story here for the last year we've been talking about is, boy, that rise up here in recent months in the business investments sure looks a lot like what you saw from 96 to 2000. Could there potentially then be, with that bunching up, a replay, softer, but a replay of then that downturn in 2001? And up to this point, that has been our scenario, a slight softening, maybe a 15% decline, not nearly, you know, the 50% decline you saw in 2001. But then, as Tom has mentioned, in recent months, both our advisors, our tax advisors, are saying maybe that bonus depreciation wasn't as large a part of that run-up, therefore it wouldn't also play as much of a role in some softening in 2005. As well, you're seeing a lot of signals out there. Intel obviously has very rosy expectations for the coming year. Supply managers nationwide are saying they see no real softening in their orders. So there's a lot of indication right now that maybe we were a little bit conservative in terms of our, you know, take on what 2005 would look like for Oregon profits in general. We still believe Oregon's unique. It's a lot more high-tech concentrated. There definitely was a huge run-up, and it's very likely you will still see a softening, just not to the degree we had originally had. So, and you will see how that, again, will play into the forecast changes. So moving on, the current biennium, we're now at about $10.4 billion in total GF resources, including the beginning balance. And the changes there are as follows. Personal income tax has been revised up about $77 million. As you saw, most of that is already in the door in terms of the forecast error in the last 3 months. We expect 2005 to be a little bit stronger than we had previously expected. Also, you have corporate income tax up somewhat, and that's because we have, say, the first 6 months of 2005 are going to be a little bit better than we had originally expected. And then finally, other revenues, not much change. There's not much signal there that there's any reason to change that. A little bit more interest earnings on that and a couple other sources, cigarette tax. But for the most part, that's unchanged. So the bottom line here is that the 0305 revenue forecast has been revised up about $96 million. And so what that implies is that we have an ending balance projection now of $187 million. The other thing to note from there, with the increase in the corporate income tax forecast, we now are projecting a $60.1 million kicker for this biennium that would then become a tax credit on 2005 tax year for corporations. Now, as we have done now in recent years, we have looked at how each of these forecasts within a biennium compare to actual revenues, and they get better, obviously, with more information. This March forecast tends, on average, over the last 2.5 decades, to have about a 1.5% error to it. And so what the implication there would be that when all is said and done, the next 4 months are over and we get an actual number, it's very likely that that number will be no more than $150 million either way of our current forecast. So right now we've finally passed the time at which the ending balance is now larger than that estimation of what the variance would be, which is a good sign. Still, however, we need to remember that a lot goes on in these last few months. You know, you get the 04 tax filing deadlines, you get a lot of payments and refunds, and the exact relative magnitudes of those varies, you know, from year to year. So there's potential there either way, more payments than refunds or less payments than refunds, to change actual revenues relative to this forecast. You also have two estimated payment deadlines for 2005. So to the degree that we're wrong about 2005 either way, you still get a lot of potential there for variance. But that's where most of your error potentially for this forecast would come in.
So are you seeing anything, I mean, we're into the 2004 tax filing season, are you seeing anything that would indicate that that chance for variance is large, or anything that's got your attention?
Mr. Chair, it's still a little too early. Even refunds right now are just going out the door, and obviously payments are negligible until about April 14th. And if we are, you know, to be completely honest, still, given what we've seen in the last 2.5 decades, there is the possibility still for a significant change here. We don't believe that it's very likely at all, given basically how we've been tracking recently and what we're seeing. But we always have to put it out there. The potential is still there. We wouldn't want to bet our houses on, you know, ending the biennium positive. I'm close, though. Give me 2 more months. And that's the current biennium. Ending balance, fairly sizable, 186. So moving on to the next biennium, that's the starting point. We now have a beginning balance projection for next biennium of $187 million. On top of that, we are now expecting revenues of $11.174 billion. And that is up $106 million. Again, for many of the reasons I've just alluded to, personal income tax is now $89 million, higher than we had originally projected at roughly $10 billion. And that's basically due to when you raise 2004, the liability level. As Tom mentioned, there's very little change to the economic scenario, growth scenario there. You've basically just raised the base upon which all of your future growth expectations are computed. So you're basically elevating then liability a little bit in each of the subsequent tax years. The consequence is here you get a slight revision upwards in the forecast for next biennium. Same thing for corporate income tax. You improve your outlook for 2005, that feeds through to subsequent tax years, and you get a slight elevation there. On the other hand, you've raised the kicker number there, so you have a slight offset, you know, roughly 11 $6 million there. So the underlying increase in the corporate income tax is actually stronger than that, but it's offset by this kicker issue. Mm-hmm. And then finally, very little change to other revenues. Those outlooks remain consistent, and those revenue streams are pretty much tracking with our current forecast. So the bottom line here is with the increase in the beginning balance plus the increase in the revenue projection, total resources for next biennium are about $202 million higher than we had in the December forecast. And that is the bottom line implication for you in terms of budgeting.
That is the bottom. That's the other exhale that we were anticipating.
And at this point, when we like to talk about risks, in comparing the forecast prior to the close of session to subsequent biennial revenues, you have one problem in that you get a lot of legislative changes. It's really incomparable because you don't know what those are going to be. If you were to compare, say, prior March forecast to subsequent biennial revenues, you have that problem is that you haven't accounted for those things. You're going to see a lot of variation there, and it's not because the forecast was bad. It's that you didn't know what subsequently was going to be added in or taken out as a result of legislative actions. So it's very hard here to sit and like give a real confidence interval based upon statistical history. Well, you'll say in general, however, if disregarding those legislative actions, we would look at somewhere between 5 and 8 percentage points either way prior to a biennium. So you'd be looking at roughly $500 to $800 million variance either way as an expectation of what you would likely see 28 months hence when next biennium is completed. So still significant room for variation there, and that basically boils down to departing from the current economic scenario. You know, either way, things boom a lot more or you actually get more than what we currently project in terms of softening or slow growth.
What legislative actions are you watching that you watch really closely when you put together the forecast?
Well, Mr. Chair, that pretty much would be a question for Paul since they basically supply us then all of the estimates.
You're talking about general credits, expenditures, cuts, enhancements.
Mr. Chair, everything you're basically working on in terms of potential tax law changes. Also, obviously, the last two biennia have seen a number of one-time actions, fund transfers, that have actually been the sizable part of what we have incorporated into the forecast.
And just on the bonus depreciation, because that's something that we are all talking about in terms of any stimulus activity, although you could argue either way on that. I listened to Tom really closely when he was talking and on bonus depreciation. Is that something that you saw? Obviously, there was a huge stimulative effect at the beginning. Is it something that was from the national drawn out over time, or was it a real bump and then we didn't see such a great stimulative effect, or is it something that just keeps on going and going and going in terms of business decisions?
Mr. Chair, in terms of the national figures, and we're looking at it, things were strong almost, in 2003, really driving up almost about seven consecutive quarters. The revised GDP figures that just came out this morning showed even a higher expenditure, about a 14% increase for the fourth quarter on business computers and equipment. So I think they were all strong, and in the last half of 2004 was probably a little bit stronger and had some relationship to that bonus depreciation. Whether we know that's going to be a real softening in 2005 or not is really hard to say. But definitely there was, I'd say, a bump up, definitely in the second half of 2004, and I would say it probably was related to those bonus depreciation reserves.
Mr. Chair, question?
Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In line with the political and the legislative risks, would you kindly comment on the potential impact of a nearly 100% Bonneville Power Administration energy increase as is proposed, and the second item, a 9/11 type terrorist attack? What would either of those two have on your forecast?
Mr. Chair, Representative Boquist, the Bonneville situation is a definite risk. We've been down this road before with past administrations and wanting to change Bonneville. I'm having great faith in our senators
I'm glad you are.
To hopefully stop that kind of action. Yes, it would hurt our economy pretty badly. We, in some of the areas that are heavy electricity users, high tech is a heavy electricity user. The aluminum industry basically has already left, so they wouldn't be impacted very much by that kind of an increase. There's adjustment periods, of course, that would occur. I don't think it would put us completely into a recession, but it would cause a very, very huge slowdown, possibly affecting business decisions and where they locate. So it could have, I think, the worry is, I think, more longer term aspect than more immediate. Then the 9/11, the interesting part about another type of similar terrorist attack, and this is not to take anything away from the devastation and the horrible aspect of it, but once you've been through one, you know better how to react to another one. And how it would affect our economy would really be related geographically. The closer it is to home, the bigger the impact. And I think we felt that through the 9/11 situation, given our distance from New York. So I think that, yes, it would definitely put throw a wrench into any sort of growth, but I don't think it would have as deep of effects as the first attack that we had.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Right. So in terms of our forecast long term, obviously you can see the near term changes there, the increase, current volume of about $100 million, to next volume of again another about $200 million total in terms of resources. But in the long term, really there's been not a whole lot of change. And one might say, well, you're revising up 2004, you're revising up 2005. In one sense, yes, you get that effect where you're changing your base. In another sense, an economy has an overall capacity to produce. And so there's, on the other hand, you get some shifting around. The stronger today, the slower growth you might expect out in the future, because you're really just shifting around. So the two things tend to go hand in hand. Obviously not much change out past 2007.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Michael, that would indicate that we're approaching capacity to expand, is that what you're saying, that we're approaching an upper limit of capacity and then we'll grow at a steady rate, or are we actually accelerating a growth right now that then will slow down?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I would definitely say we're not at capacity in this economy in particular. There's plenty of excess capacity in terms of office space and definitely in terms of production, employment, plenty of unutilized labor force. It's more that those aren't the limiting factors, but basically just how the economy plays out. When you take in the national forecast and you feed it through, it remains uncertain what would prompt a takeoff again, like we saw in the 90s. You just don't know what that catalyst is going to be, and without having a really strong idea of what and when, you basically go with more of these. You're just long term, it's going to be the average growth you've seen over the course of a long period of time.
So, Mr. Chair, I assume there's no takeoff in this. It's just steady growth after the time we reach our capacity, upper capacity.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, that is correct.
Thank you.
Just in terms of percentage changes, because those who look back in time, we maybe have a better idea of what we're talking about. And this gives you a good idea in terms of capacity. Because even for 2005-2007, you're looking at a kicker-adjusted rate of 9.1%. For a biennium, that's still very low relative to the 15-16% averages you saw for the last 2.5 decades. So most definitely, even though this biennium was a very good biennium, next biennium looking to be about average, still much slower than normal. Our long-term outlook even now is roughly the 11-13% range. It just goes to show how different we think the economy is right now relative to what it was like in the 80s and the 90s. And again, the difference there, if this turns out not to be correct and it's much stronger, that's just saying that something out there does kick in. It's just at this point in time, you don't know what that's going to be. Moving on to lottery, we'll start off with the current biennium because there's not a whole lot of change there. The forecast is tracking very well. Basically have a revised up revenues or earnings transferred to the state by about $5.6 million. So you're looking at about $790 million in total resources, lottery resources available. You'll notice here that allocations have gone up. They're now at 787.3. That is because I've shifted the $67 million state school fund payment that had been, we had been computing that against the ending balance and saying, how close are we to meeting that excess limitation that was granted? Well, now it's been met. And so it's assured, basically, that that will be transferred to the state school fund. So I've put it up in the allocation line, even though the action hasn't been taken, just in order so that we can actually have a real ending balance here of what we can likely expect to be transferred to next biennium. So those are the changes that have been made, purely presentational. Now moving on to next biennium with its attendant issues. As we all know, the governor included basically $120 million in his budget associated with various lottery actions, most significant of which was the addition of these slot or line games to the video lottery terminals.
He did? Does everyone?
And so we're currently, we'll tell you right now for the March forecast, we're currently still with lottery, with legislative revenue, working on exactly what the details of these actions are going to be and how they feed into the forecast. So it's not set in stone yet. I'm sure you're all aware still that even lottery is in negotiations with retailers, so that particular aspect remains uncertain. What lottery has committed to, though, is to do whatever it takes, basically, to come up with those additional dollars. So they are in this forecast, basically on some amount of direct impact. So the line or slot impact we're assuming now is a 12% increase in sales, just with adding that product to the video lottery terminal. And when you add that 12% in, you get an $82 million increase in projected earnings to the state. So that's the direct impact from the line games themselves. We have also then just added a line item that says lottery will take various other policy actions and have pegged that basically to the $120 million.
You have not looked at it all as a commission rate and what would be paid in 05-07. You've just allowed that to be commission decision at this point.
Mr. Chair, we have worked on it. We know what the various potential is there. In terms of incorporating into this, though, it's still so uncertain about how it will eventually play out. There's so much to be negotiated yet. What we can tell you, though, is that given their timeline for, you know, having their forums and the commission meeting in early April, that come the May forecast, a lot of this will be ironed down and will be factored directly as explicit impacts to the forecast, as they should be.
Okay.
You know, try to reduce that, basically just that anticipated action to zero, so that you have a direct understanding of, A, what's in there, why it's in there, and then what the potential variation around that could be, you know, in terms of ultimate lottery resources. So right now what this forecast assumes is that lottery is going to take those actions. I've got 934 in there. That's the governor's budget level. If you factor in the ending balance right now, you're at about 939 projected when you just take base forecast plus $120 million. So that's basically a commitment right now, is to come up with that gross level of earnings. So that's how the forecast has been factored, and you can see that here. Beginning balance is the first time we've added that in now that the $67 million limitation has been met. Earnings now, you can see the $82.5 million. That's the direct impact of assuming a 12% sales increase from the slot games. You have then, as I said, an anticipated actions of $37.9 million, be they commission structure changes, other traditional games, a variety of different actions that they still have on the table. With other resources, which is just interest earnings on the Economic Development Fund, you get a total resource figure of $810 million, and that's up 120 of that's, and the rest is the beginning balance. So when you look at the actual dedications, you're left with a discretionary resources of about $445 million, and that increases $73.4 million after you factor out parks, natural resources, education stability fund. So in terms of the long-term forecast, it has a significant impact. What you'll notice is the total, that's why I'm a little confused. I think that table is has a problem. The total for next biennium is about 940 currently projected. Not quite sure what's going on with that previous table. 940 is the total resource number for lottery for 0507. Now you notice there's not much change after that because that 0507 contains those other actions that's 37 million. The only thing that's feeding through to biennium after that is just the 12% increase in BLT sales. So very much similar to what we deal with here with the one-time actions. You tend to see not as much growth going into the future because prior to sine die, you aren't including certain things that you know will eventually get factored into subsequent forecasts. So it's one of the issues we have with a current law forecast. Huh. We don't anticipate those things until they're enacted. Just in terms of what I always like to look at the distributions, where do these dollars go? As you can see in recent years, more and more of lottery dollars are dedicated. You can see debt services increasing. There's been more bonding on lottery dollars. The increase from 15% to 18% for the Education Stability Fund. So that actual discretionary resources aren't going by nearly as much as you see total lottery earnings. And that.
Mr. Chair, question?
Yes, please. Representative.
Thank you. In regard to the assumed long-run sales impact of 12% versus a growth rate in the state of less than 2%, could you just expand your confidence to us of how realistic is that 12% figure?
Mr. Chair, Representative Boquist, I've looked at the data that underlie this. It's a comparison across the number of jurisdictions that operate video lottery terminals and comparing those with the slot type games with those that don't. And so you look at that variance, and there's a very real variance there in terms of per capita sales rates, sales as a percentage of income. In particular, lottery has looked at West Virginia as a fairly decent comparable. They have blind games. We do not. The differential West Virginia just to Oregon is almost 18%. And now the thing you get from looking at these data, however, is that there are a number of factors that dictate your per capita sales rate, your relative to income rates, other than just what's on those VLTs. And so that's the caveat there is you don't really know exactly what's driving that. But you do know that to some degree, since across the board, line game jurisdictions, a large number of Canadian provinces do make considerably more money, that there is some element of that there. What we've basically taken is a nice middle-of-the-road estimate, and around that, your ultimate realization could be as low as 5% increase, as high as 20-25%. So we've just basically ended. And that came out of a conversation with legislative revenue, lottery, fiscal, and I think everybody is...
Will you forecast up, say, in April, they go to a 15% commission rate? Would you forecast the lottery up for line games in April or May if the commission goes that route?
Mr. Chair, I factor in the commission rate structure as the percentage assumption I make of how much of the lottery dollars or the video dollars come to the state. So it's a very direct translation. If they get a blended rate of, say, 22%, which is what the current structure would account, I would raise that percentage transfer, and it would directly factor into the forecast. So it's a one-to-one thing.
So I hear a yes, but I'll say that, not you. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Michael, on the lottery revenues, the earnings are anticipated at 12.1% increase over the last forecast. How does that compare nationally? Is Oregon's continued uptick in lottery, are we at our share, above our share, and how does that tie in with the other discussions of regional lottery issues, gaming issues, probably?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, it's very difficult to tell because, as I say, jurisdictions differ so greatly. Some don't have Indian gaming relatively close. When I just look at the state's share, it's a very low percentage of income relative to other states. And so that's one of the reasons why we're comfortable with the 12%, because we are at a place where obviously we could stand to gain from drawing resources, other expenditures, from other entertainment expenditures, from the Indian gaming casinos. And in terms of just the general base growth, obviously we've recently gone to using our consumption expenditure growth as our predictor for this growth, since it tends to grow just like any other entertainment expenditure. In that sense, we're very much like most other jurisdictions that are mature, have a stable system like we have.
Tom, how are we doing on diversifying the economy? In previous forecasts, we would always discuss our over-reliance on technology was always one area that we would focus in on. And have we seen a resurgence in the natural resource sector? You talked about aluminum and metals. Any good news on that front of seeing further diversification?
Mr. Chair, we have a better diversified economy than we did, say, even, you know, late 70s, where it was very heavily natural resource-based in the wood products industry. As I've said in previous talks, in our process of diversifying our economy, our manufacturing is much different and more diverse than it was before, but we actually became a more manufacturing-based economy overall. And so when you have a recession that hits all manufacturing almost equally, it's like you were back to having only one main industry controlling things, and you get yourself into trouble again. But that still bodes well for us, because on net, we have positive growth, even though we tend to boom a little bit more than other places and we went down farther than other places. On net, the growth is still positive. And I think, though, you know, what has happened in our diversification is I would say that high tech, if anything, has spread through all our industries. You take a look at lumber and wood industry, I would consider now a more high tech industry. You have sawmills that can be run with a handful of people. May not necessarily mean you're going to get lots more employment, but it's an industry that can compete better worldwide because of the high technology. Agriculture is the same way. Now, you know, monitoring when plants grow and the exact time when is the best time to use pesticides, so you can decrease the amount of time you use them and lessen the cost of using them. So I think the diversification has helped us, machinery and so on. We still have a predominance, definitely, in high tech, but our predominance, too, in high tech tends to be in research high tech. You know, here is where the fab plants figure out the best way to make the new 300-millimeter, you know, silicone wafers, and then once they perfect that, it's then copied throughout all the fab plants around the world. We've even seen our drop in our high-tech employment in computer electronics was less during this recession than the U.S. average was. And I think part of it is because of that research function. But going back to Representative Boquist's statements, the danger is possibly losing that niche that we have. If other countries become a place where they can also do this research just as well as we can do it here, and do it with a cheaper value-added labor, like engineers, then there is some danger, I think, for us. But there's exciting things, I think, on the forefront. I think nanotechnology is a real promising area, and we have a real absolute niche in Oregon in that area.
Boy, you get bonus points from me for mentioning that. If you can mention all of our key programs that we're actually advocating for and working under the forecast, you will definitely have 10 happy. Representative Haas.
Thank you. Of the 61,000 jobs gained back, Tom, can you make any kind of comment of how much those workers are earning versus those who lost jobs? Are they, on average, making about the same, a little more, a little less?
Mr. Chair, Representative Haas, the Employment Department actually did a study looking at that. And their results basically say the best they can tell is that the average earnings coming back are probably a little less than what the average earnings were of the jobs lost.
So people are making less even though we've recovered these jobs.
Basically, yes. And that falls into, you know, think about what I said about the forecast for our high-tech sector. You know, employment does not return back to its previous peak level. It grows, but, you know, so we have structurally, I think, lost some of those higher-paying jobs, and the jobs coming back. Still, you know, it's great having those jobs. And the earnings, definitely, average incomes have risen now since mid-2003. But there is evidence that, on average, those earnings are a little less than what the jobs were that were lost.
Representative Palacio.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Recognizing that there are a lot of unknowns and variables and what happens internationally and nationally probably has a bigger impact on Oregon, what would you advise policymakers who desire growing Oregon's economy, or at least creating the conditions in which Oregon's economy can grow? And let's say they had $96 million right now, and you had the governor's budget as a baseline. Where would you invest if policymakers were going to choose to invest that money? Where would you advise them to invest that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Delizio, Mr. Chair, just what you said about me hitting all the sectors, now I'm going to lose all that.
I heard Onami. I heard Onami loud and clear.
Well, let me, and I don't want to take too much more of your time, let me just describe something to you and how I look at things. We're worried about outsourcing, as an example, and how can we compete better in the world? And maybe, if we could invest someplace that we could compete better. And I hear the arguments in outsourcing are very similar to our arguments about unfair trade practices. And what I mean by that is, let's say a South Korean chip maker would bring chips into the U.S. and they would try to sell them here below their cost in order to drive out U.S. manufacturers so they could gain greater market share. U.S. manufacturers would yell, foul, this is bad trade practices, they can't do this, we've got to slap quotas on them, sanctions, anything else that we can, tariffs, and to stop this unfair dumping. It's an unfair trade practice. Well, I think our response right now as a country to outsourcing, our argument is very similar to a poor trade or unfair trade practice. We're yelling at India and China and we're saying, what are you doing? You're producing engineers, accountants, professional white-collar jobs. You're investing in your higher education system. And you're doing it at a lower cost than what we are. That's an unfair trade practice. You should not be helping your people. We don't help ours. So I really think if we're going to compete, we've got to look at our higher education system and find out how we can also keep that value added in our human capital to be able to compete effectively in international markets.
Amen.
Dr. Potowski, off the record, or unplugged. We appreciate it. That's very good comments. Well, thank you very much. We really appreciate the time, the wisdom, and the forecast. We're getting measurable rain as we speak, so that might help a bit. Any final comments? Thank you, House members, for joining us. We stand adjourned.
Thank you.